Thanks for selling your car to Carvana. Here's your check.
Whoa, when did I get here?
What do you mean?
I swear it was just moments ago that I accepted a great offer from Carvana online. I must have time traveled to the future.
It was just moments ago. We do same day pickup. Here's your check for that great offer.
It is the future.
It's the present and just the convenience of Carvana. Sorry to blow your mind.
It's all good. It happens all the time.
Sell your car the convenient way to
Carvana.
Pickup times may vary and fees may apply.
Buying a car in Carvana was so easy. I was able to finance it through them.
Whoa, wait, you mean finance?
Yeah, finance. Got pre-qualified for a Carvana auto loan, entered my terms, and shopped from thousands of great car options all within my budget.
That's cool that financing through Carvana was so easy.
Financed. Done. And I get to pick up my car from their Carvana vending machine tomorrow.
Financed.
Right, that's what I said.
You can spend time trying to pronounce financing, or you can actually finance and buy your car today on
Carvana.
Financing subject to credit approval. Additional terms and conditions may apply.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all levels of professional baseball to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, the Tool Shed podcast has you covered with rankings, player analysis, and in-depth discussion. And now, here's your host, Eric Cross.
Welcome in to another episode of the Tool Shed podcast brought to you by Rotoballer. This is episode 409. Thank you for joining me. I'm your host, Eric Cross. You can find me on Twitter at EricCrossMLB, and the show is at ToolShedPod. Rolling solo in this episode. I wasn't 100% sure I would do this episode, the second one of the week. I already had a good episode with Eric Samolsky on some intriguing young pitchers back in episode 408. So if you missed that, go back and check that out. But with all the really fun, notable prospect promotions we've had over the last week, definitely wanted to get this episode out there, start talking about these guys. There's six notable ones, a few other smaller ones that we've had over the last week or so, and then also talk about who else could we see in the majors over the remainder of the season. We get about 5 weeks or so, a little over 5 weeks left of the regular season for Major League Baseball. So definitely could still see some more notable prospect names get that call up to the majors. But before we get into all of that, the usual housekeeping. If you enjoy the podcast, please rate and review. You can find all of my content either on Rotoballer or over on my Patreon, which is toolshedfantasy.com. And make sure you check out all of the great content over on Rotoballer with Rotoballer's MLB Premium Pass. Gain access to expert tools and advice from proven winners. Import your leagues with TeamSync and get expert advice customized for your league-specific settings. Win more with Rotoballer's lineup assistant tools, free agent finder, prop picks, and the number one DFS lineup optimizer. Our premium pass comes with a 100% money-back guarantee. Go to rotoballer.com/radio and use the discount code TOOLSHED at checkout. All right, so let's start with, we'll go like most recent to the ones that were last week or so. We'll start with the two big ones today. On the hitting side, Carson Williams of the Tampa Bay Rays and Yostinson Garcia, a.k.a. The Password, which is a phenomenal nickname that I'm not 100% sure if, my good friend, former co-host Chris Clegg gave him that one or if he was just one of the first ones to say it. Can't remember, but it's a very good password. Yeah. Yeah, if you had Yostinson as your password, that would be a great password. It's almost like the newer version of Carl Yastrzemski for Red Sox fans. You know how long it took me to figure out how to, spell Yastrzemski when I was a teenager? It took a little bit. So Yostinson didn't take quite as long as Yastrzemski did, but still a good name, good nickname, and obviously a very good prospect. So we'll start there with Garcia, who's been getting a little bit of work in lately at first base, because that's what the Red Sox like to do now. It's, hey, you want to play first base? It's like Oprah. You get to play first base. You get to play first base. Everybody gets to play first base, especially ones that have never played there before. So been a fun year in Boston in regards to that first base spot with, Cassis being out for the year and part of next year. But, who knows if or how much time Garcia will see there. Again, he's still very, very inexperienced. He was just getting into game action at first base a handful of days ago. But with Willier Abreu on the IL, Rob Refsnyder already on the IL. So I do think it'll be mostly in the outfield, but maybe you see him, game or two at first base. A little bit of DH as well. Obviously, the Sox just got Nathaniel Lowe, who should be taking over at first base. Still got Romy Gonzalez. So I don't think you'll see him at first base enough to get that eligibility for next year. But who knows? You know, maybe he will. But I do think that's mostly going to be in that corner outfield spot for Boston. In 99 games this year, 33 of which were in Double A, 66 in Triple A, slash 289, 363, 512, with 20 home runs, 17 doubles, 4 triples, 6 steals, a walk rate just a hair under 10% at 9.9%, and a 25.5% strikeout rate. You know, this comes after having kind of like a breakout year last year between Low A, High A, and Double A, when he went 23-17 in just 107 games with a 286, 356, 536 slash line. So slash line pretty close. You know, all three guards average on base and slugging from last year to this year. Walk rate's gone up a little bit by 2.7%, but though the K rate has ticked up as well, primarily in AAA. His AA K rate, 21%, was actually in line with last year, but AAA K rate for him, for Garcia, has been 27.5%. So he's kind of shifted into more of a power first profile, but it's not a bad contact approach profile. It's just he's a little aggressive. You know, you definitely can kind of put him more, a little more on the aggressive side. You know, swing rates have been, you know, generally 50%, 50-55% for him in his minor league career. But the power, even though like these metrics that I'm about to tell you aren't like super elite by any means, but he's definitely a good power bat. He had 12% barrel rate in AAA this season. You know, as a righty bat that can really get to that pull side pop, I think he's going to have a really good, you know, potential 25 plus maybe 30 homer season outcomes, you know, as a righty in Fenway Park. And I think the average is going to be respectable. Like, I don't think he's going to hit 280 plus or anything like that. Like, he's not a guy that projects to be that type of hitter. But if he continues to get to that pull side power, like this year, he's at a pull rate around 46%. Last year was about 40%, so it's even gone up. This year was 51% in AA. This year, 44% pull rate in AAA, and gets to the, you know, gets the ball in the air at a decent clip too. So he's got a air rate of around 60% this year. So I think he can hit 250, 260, maybe even 270, somewhere in that 250 to 270 range, 25 plus home runs, and he can run a little bit too. Not a burner by any means, but a solid runner and a guy that could give you double digit steals. So maybe looking at like a 25-10 with a, you know, respectable average and OBP type of profile here. So long-term, I like Garcia a lot. I mean, in my prospect rankings right now, and this is, you know, these are live current rankings. So updated since my last update, which was on the first of the month on my Patreon. I have him right now at 26, kind of in a little outfield cluster with Dylan Beavers, who I'll talk about in a little bit here. Mike Sirota, Chase DeLauder, Spencer Jones, Lazaro Montez, kind of a big tier there in like the, you know, mid to late 20s of my prospect rankings. So I think, you know, I think that speaks volumes to how high I am on him long term. But short term, I mean, he should play semi-regularly over the next week or two while Abreu's on the IL. But once Abreu comes back, or once Ref Center comes back, or both, I'm not fully sure like how valuable he's going to be this year. So like shallow leagues, I'm not like rushing out to get Garcia, but you know, 12 plus team leagues, 15 team leagues, absolutely. Again, he's a, you know, borderline top 25 prospect for me for a reason. You know, the power upside is there, can run a bit, won't kill you in average or OBP. So yeah, I like Garcia a lot and really excited to see what he can do here for the Red Sox. He's not in the lineup tonight. I'm recording this. It's about 7:15 or so on the East Coast. So he's not in the lineup today, but hopefully he'll be in there tomorrow on Friday. See what he can do this weekend against the Yanks. The other one today, Carson Williams from the Tampa Bay Rays got the call. Williams is, this might sound weird, this is not a direct comp, but it's there's some similarities when you just kind of look at the profile as a whole, and the fact that it's a really good profile but really lacks in one area. So that's why I'm going to make this kind of comparison for Carson Williams to Spencer Jones, where you know there's a ton of upside, even more so with Jones, obviously. But as a baseball player, Carson Williams does a lot of things well. Like, literally every part of the profile is really good with one major exception. All right, so this year, and he's been moving fairly slowly. I mean, yeah, he's a little bit young. He's 22. He got to AAA at a younger age, but he spent all of last year in AA. After he was pushed a little bit in 2023 across three levels, but only had a cup of coffee in AA and AAA, all of last year in AA, all of this year in AAA, 111 games, 23 home runs, 22 steals, 12.5% walk rate, 213, 318, 447 slash line. So yeah, here's where we start getting into that one bad area, which is, well, you kind of want, two areas, kind of combine them into one, just does not make contact enough. So higher K rate, 34.1% this year, and you're looking at below average contact rates, and that's putting it nicely too. You look at what Carson Williams is at this year. It's pretty bad both in zone and overall. Carson Williams is at a 61.3% contact rate this year. That is just not going to get it done whatsoever. And it's not like he's, some of the guys that have lower contact rates overall, sometimes you're like, oh, well, at least the zone contact rate is respectable. And that's not really the case here with Carson Williams either, as the zone contact rate this season is around 75%. So, that's not the case. It's not like he's running 84% zone contact rate or anything like that. So that's the issue here. I mean, the defense is elite. The power speed blend, above average in both regards. This guy could be an annual 2020 guy, but what is he hitting? That's like, what is, and he walks at a good clip. So like, it's just the whole like putting the bat on the ball consistently part, which is the issue, which has led to the higher strikeout rate, which is all-time high for him this year. That 34% rate, like we give a lot of flack to Spencer Jones, but I think because more so the peaks and valleys for Jones are way more prominent than they are with Carson Williams. But there's similar issues there where it's like, can this guy hit for a respectable average? OBP should be a bit better because he's always walked at a good clip and had a chance to talk with him a couple years ago in the AFL. Like, this is like a good, really good ball player. He's going to have a long career, but can the average be there for your fantasy teams? That's just the question I have right now. So I don't know. I've kept him top 50. I think he warrants it given everything else in the profile. I mean, a lot of top 50 prospects have like an area of concern, one area or another, where it's like, all right, are they going to run at all? Will the power be impactful? Can they keep the K rate down? Stuff like that. So, there's not many prospects where you don't have at least one concern with them. And yes, this is a notable concern. This is not just a minimal concern with Carson Williams, but really good player. Just got to wonder if that average is going to hurt your fantasy team. So that's why I've kind of cooled on him being like a top 20 guy. I think a lot of big publications still have him there, especially ones that are more real life focused as opposed to fantasy. But I can't just go top 25 until some of those concerns are rectified, but unfortunately they've kind of gone the opposite way this year. So even more concerned now than I was before the season started in this regard for Carson Williams. So it's something to keep an eye on here moving forward. But let's go over to the two Baltimore guys. We got Samuel Basayo and Dylan Beavers both getting the call to Baltimore over the last week. Right now, Basayo is my number 10 prospect overall, and Beavers is 24th overall. But let's actually start with Dylan Beavers, because I think, and I've said this several times on this podcast and in articles, so both on Patreon and Rotoballer, that I think Dylan Beavers is one of the most underrated prospects in all baseball. I mean, he's not like off the radar by any means, but he does not get enough love as being one of the best prospects in baseball, both in a real life perspective and from a fantasy, you know, under a fantasy lens, because he just does everything well. But yeah, he doesn't have that one loud tool. He doesn't have huge power, blazing speed, you know, doesn't have that one tool that just pops off the page and smacks you in the face like Spencer Jones's power does or Carson Williams's defense does. But the sum of the parts here is a really good overall profile with not really any notable weaknesses like the other two guys we've already talked about. So, you know, Garcia has some contact issues, not as prominent. Williams has those. Beavers does not. You look at what he's done this year. Last year, you know, solid year, but this year has kind of been his official, like, big, you know, coming out party, you know, where he kind of vaulted himself into the elite ranks for me, right, in my prospect rankings. In 94 games, AAA Norfolk, 304, 420, 515 slash line, 18 home runs, 23 steals, 16.3% walk rate, 18.2% strikeout rate. You know, he makes contact above 80% of the time, you know, above average zone contact as well. So you really could say that for, you know, offensively, for fantasy purposes, he's just above average across the board, you know, and the quality of contact metrics are good. Average EV just a hair under 90 miles an hour, hard hit rate 41%, barrel rate 9%. I mean, those don't blow you away, but could he be an upper teens, low 20s home run guy? Absolutely. Could he be 20 plus steals annually? Absolutely. You know, are the contact skills and approach there to be a decent source of average and even probably an even better source of OBP? Also, yes. So it kind of feels like what I was saying about Matt Shaw, you know, earlier in the year or last year, where Shaw didn't have any wild tools. And yeah, Shaw's been fairly inconsistent and kind of underwhelming so far. But it's that similar thought where it's, you know, he's just going to give you a pretty good production across the board, or could. He has these skills to do so. I mean, obviously nothing is guaranteed. We've seen that with prospects. But yeah, I like Dylan Beavers a lot. And given, you know, what we've seen in the Baltimore outfield lately, I mean, they've had a lot of injuries. Tyler O'Neill's been in and out of the lineup all season. Colton Cowser, same thing. I mean, Cowser is back right now, playing center field, but he was just on the IL as of like 4 or 5 days ago. And Tyler O'Neill is back on the IL with wrist inflammation. Who knows when you see him back again? So like they were starting like this a hodgepodge of like Dylan Carlson and Daniel Johnson, Jeremiah Jackson at one point. So I'm surprised it took as long as it did, though I'm sure they were waiting till after. So I think he got called up on the 15th of August, if I recall correctly, or the 16th. So that means they have his rookie rights and eligibility for 2026, because that was the 45-day mark from the end of the regular season. So Dylan Beavers should get plenty of run. I mean, he started all five games since getting called up in right field for four of them and in left field for one of them. You know, he's hitting 6th, 7th, 8th in the lineup, bottom 3rd. That's fine. Not sure there's like a ton of immediate impact, you know, this year, though he definitely could. I'd definitely give him a look in 12 to 15 team redraft leagues. But long term, you know, maybe this is another going to be like your outfield 1 or outfield 2, but like outfield 3, outfield 4, just solid 5 category production, I think is what Dylan Beavers can provide long term. So I think he's still underrated. I think he's still a solid value target in dynasty leagues because the price tag I don't think is as high as it should be. And though it obviously has risen this year, but I still think you can get him for not a top 25 prospect price tag. And that's where I have him ranked right now. So Dylan Beavers, love the profile there. Based on hundreds of millions of real world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
Buying a car in Carvana was so easy. I was able to finance it through them.
Whoa, wait, you mean finance?
Yeah, finance. Got pre-qualified for a Carvana auto loan, entered my terms, and shopped from thousands of great car options all within my budget.
That's cool that financing through Carvana was so easy.
Financed. Done. And I get to pick up my car from their Carvana vending machine tomorrow.
Financed.
Right, that's what I said.
You can spend time trying to pronounce financing, or you can actually finance and buy your car today on
Carvana.
Financing subject to credit approval. Additional terms and conditions may apply.
Buying a car in Carvana was so easy. I was able to finance it through them.
Whoa, wait, you mean finance?
Yeah, finance. Got pre-qualified for a Carvana auto loan, entered my terms, and shopped from thousands of great car options all within my budget.
That's cool that financing through Carvana was so easy.
Financed. Done. And I get to pick up my car from their Carvana vending machine tomorrow.
Financed.
Right, that's what I said.
You can spend time trying to pronounce financing, or you can actually finance and buy your car today on
Carvana.
Financing subject to credit approval. Additional terms and conditions may apply.
And obviously, everyone and their mother loves Samuel Basile. I mean, who doesn't love Samuel Basile at this point with what he's done this season in AAA and, you know, what he's done really for his entire minor league career? In 76 games for AAA Norfolk, I mean, that AAA Norfolk lineup was pretty good for most of the season, especially with Beavers and Basile being there for the entire season with others coming in and out. But 76 games for Basile, 321 plate appearances, 270, 377, 589, slash line, 23 home runs, a 13.7% walk rate, and a 23.7% strikeout rate. But, you know, obviously the big carrying tool, like he has that one loud tool, and it's the power. Contact skills, you know, around 70% contact rate. So he's a fringe average contact guy right now, but it's one of those profiles, one of those players where if you look at just like the rates themselves, you'd say, oh, that's 45 grade, or maybe if you want to be generous, like a fringe average 50 grade, right? But he hits the ball so hard that he could still hit for a decent average. It's not like if this was a middle of the road 50 grade power guy with these contact skills, I mean, you're like, oh, this guy will hit 240 or so. But given how hard his batted balls usually are, he's going to find hits. A lot of those being over the outfield wall. So he's going to probably run a higher BABIP than most and keep that average decent. So even though he might look like a 250, 245 hitter, if you look at the contact rates, I think you see 260, 270, maybe even a little bit higher than that in some seasons from Basile long term. So that quality of contact is truly, truly elite. It's a 94 mile an hour average exit velocity, 57.5% hard hit rate, and a 21% barrel rate. Just to put it in perspective, these are what Roman Anthony was running for quality of contact in AAA before he got promoted. 95 mile an hour average EV, so 0.8 miles an hour above Basile. 57.6% hard hit rate, 0.2% above Basile, and a 20.3% barrel rate, 0.7% below Basile. So nearly identical quality of contact metrics. You know, obviously, Roman Anthony, you know, a bit better contact skills, and he runs too, so that's why he was number one guy for many, including myself, and Basile has been more like back-end top 10 for me. But this could be one of the truly elite power sources in this game, and not just at the catcher spot. I mean, we don't often see many 30 homer catchers. Obviously, Cal Raleigh is doing that this year. Could be a 50, 55 homer guy this year, but generally we just don't see a ton of 30 home run catchers that often. I think we could with Basile. Now, here's the question. Like, how long does Basile carry catcher eligibility? That's like the, anytime you talk about Basile, like nobody, whenever I get questions about Basile, they're, I think 90%, I'm not even like making this up, I feels like it's 90% of them are in regard to, well, like, what's the eligibility look like? How long does he keep catcher eligibility? Does he move to first? Like, what is that position next to his name moving forward? Short answer, I'm not entirely sure. Do I think he can catch enough to maintain that eligibility? At least initially, yes. You know, Adley's been banged up a little bit, and Adley hasn't been like phenomenal. I'm not saying Adley's bad by any means, so don't take it that way. But I think you see Bisayo catch enough for at least, you know, going into next year, retaining it, and probably for the first few years. And then we'll see long term. You know, you'll see, you know, how he looks as a major league catcher behind the plate, calling a game, framing, blocking, you know, everything. And then I think that Baltimore will have a better idea. Like, all right, is this a guy that we can, you know, trust as our starter there, or is he more of like a backup, but play him at first, get him DH, one of those types of roles. So I do think he keeps it short term, hopefully keeps it long term. But even if it's a first base only guy long term, again, 260, 270 with 30 plus bombs is still a top 10 first baseman. But if he's a catcher, he's probably a top three, you know, catcher long term. And I think a lot of dynasty rankings have him there. You know, for the most part right now, obviously it's Cal Raleigh at one. But after that, I mean, you could honestly make a case for Bisayo as high as number two for dynasty catchers. I have Will Smith there at two. You know, but the dynasty catcher kind of landscape has gotten really good with the emergences of, you know, like Ben Rice, Augustin Ramirez, Drake Baldwin, Yvonne Herrera, though he probably loses it this year, eligibility. Will Smith is still really good. And you still got William Contreras. You still got Yainer Diaz. Like, there's so many good young catchers in the game right now. So I think this position's in a good spot, but you already see Bisayo ranked ahead of some of these guys that have already shown it at the major league level. I think that just shows, like, all right, how much potential Sammy Bisayo has. So long term, but you know, long term, don't be surprised if just from an overall value, like if you fast forward like 5 years from now, look at ADP for redraft league in the year 2030. If Bisayo and Beavers are similarly ranked or ADP wise, because while, you know, Bisayo has way more power, Beavers runs. He's to add 20 plus more steals than Bisayo ever does. I think he's a better pure hitter than Bisayo. So what he, you know, he might be 10, 12 home runs behind Bisayo, but he makes it up in terms of potential average gain and the speed. So, I mean, I have them only 15 spots apart, which isn't huge in the grand scheme of things, but I think Beavers is, again, just being slept on a little too much, not given as much credit as he should be. That's probably a better way to word that. But obviously, Bisayo, absolute stud. It could be really exciting to see, you know, these two guys and, you know, down the stretch here for Baltimore. But can we just talk about, like, just real quick before I go on, that's a cool little note here. The current starting lineup for Baltimore. So you look at what it's been the last handful of games. It is, and well, with Bisayo making his debut on, what was it, Sunday. So he's been in three games since then. But for primarily the lineup right now is Jackson Holliday, Jordan Westberg, Gunnar Henderson, Ryan Mountcastle, Colton Cowser, Sammy Bisayo, Kobe Mayo, Dylan Beavers, Dylan Carlson. Every name I just listed off, with the exception of the number nine hitter, Dylan Carlson, is someone that Baltimore either drafted or signed. They drafted seven of those guys, signed Bisayo 4 years ago, drafted Holliday and Beavers in 22, drafted Westberg and Mayo in 20, Gunner was 2019, Cowser was 21, and Mountcastle, the old man of the bunch, was back in 2015. So that's just pretty cool how they've done all of this just by drafting well and signing well. Just got to figure out the pitching side, but I think that was a cool little tidbit I wanted to add in there. All right, moving on. A couple other prospect promotions here, the two other big ones. One more hitter, and that's Owen Casey with the Chicago Cubs, who had just got better throughout the season. I mean, Casey's always had the pretty notable raw power, but he had some strikeout issue concerns. He had some contact rate concerns really for the majority of his minor league career. And that's kind of why I had a hard time ranking Casey for the most part. He was a guy that would kind of jump up and down my rankings. One of the harder guys for me to rank, because when these prospects that have, you know, tools that on both sides, both good and bad, that kind of just pull you like, all right, there's a lot of good there, but also, you know, a lot of bad as well. Those are the hardest guys. Like Spencer Jones, I've said many times, has been the hardest guy for me to rank, you know, for a long time. But you also saw some notable improvements from Owen Casey this year. Like the contact skills were going up, you know, for the most part, month over month this season, and K rate was going down too. So that shows like that there was some tangible, like there was some work being done. Like it wasn't just like a fluky, oh, like 1 month it went up and then it went back down after that. Like these were consistent, you know, month over month changes for Owen Casey, to the point where, you know, maybe it's not a major concern moving forward with him. And maybe it's not a massive red flag like it once was, because this year you see, you know, let's look at the contact skills year over year. You know, 2021, you know, when he first debuted, you know, he was sub 70%. 2022, just over 70%. 2023, back under 70%. But this year, you know, again, he was getting up near like 74-75%, you know, in the, you know, the later part of his AAA tenure. So that's definitely passable. And he was above average zone contact rate, you know, kind of in the last month and a half or so in AAA. To go with good power, like he wasn't sacrificing power either, because his contact or quality of contact was almost as good as, you know, Sammy Basayo's. It's a 92 mile an hour average EV, 52.5% hard hit rate, and a 17.5% barrel rate. You know, he's a 30 homer guy at Wrigley. And, you know, he's starting to, you know, put that power on display. He already has his first career home run with the Cubs. You know, that was good to see the other day. You know, walks at a good clip. He's always been a higher walk rate guy. And this year, you know, 289, 389, 566 slash line, 22 bombs in 93 games. Now, last year was 19 home runs in 127 games. I definitely think the power is here to be a 30 home run bat. And if these gains stick, we'll have to see. I mean, we've seen this before. Some guys, you know, improve their contact skills, but they can't sustain it year over year. But if the newer look Casey that we saw in, like, you know, June, July in AAA is here to stay, I mean, you could see him be like a top 100 player long term. But if he kind of goes back to, you know, the Casey of, you know, the last few years and the early part of 2025, and maybe he's only a 230, 240 hitter in the major leagues. But if he can just get 250 plus, keep the average respectable, OBP should be decent, even though he's not really walking a ton with the Cubs so far, but it's only six games, nothing to worry about there. He's always been like an 11%+ walk rate guy. So probably be a little more valuable in OBP formats than in average formats. But yeah, there's a lot to like here with Owen Casey, and he can run a little bit. He only has three steals this year, but, you know, I think he's a guy that could give you like 5 to 10, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, something like that, steals as well. It's be a good like outfield 3-4 type for fantasy teams, maybe a top 30 to 40 outfielder long term, especially if he's with the Cubs. I don't know how this is going to play out. You know, they still have that log jam. Thought he'd be traded by now. He wasn't. Still could be in the offseason for pitching. Who knows? But do they resign Kyle Tucker? So a lot of variables in play here with that Cubs outfield, which obviously is just loaded, both, you know, major leagues and minor leagues. You know, Kevin Alcantara is trying to get into that mix as well. So trying to get Jonathan Long in. I know he's not an outfielder, but it's a lot of guys at AAA trying to get him to that Cubs lineup. But I think Owen Casey should have a decent chance to, you know, be starting next year, whether it's with the Cubs or elsewhere. We'll see. But yeah, Owen Casey, definitely encouraged by what we've seen from him month over month this year. All right, the last name, the pitcher here, Bubba Chandler, finally getting the promotion. I thought he was being stuck in AAA forever. I had a dream of him being in AAA in the year 2038, and he's like, you know, 35 years old at that time or whatever it is. So finally gets the call. But this year has been, I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, some people are like, oh, it's the ABS system. Sure, but he's been there all year, and you know, it was walk rate was I think like 7% over his first 6-7 starts. Then it ballooned. Overall walk rate this year is around 12%. Actually, it's 12% on the nose. K rate still high. It did tick down a little bit this year, but it's still a good 27.5%. Strikeout rate, you know, 248 batting average against, 148 whip. So you got to wonder, like, how much it was him just, I mean, I don't want to say getting bored. People have used that terminology. Like, oh, he's too bored. I don't know if that's it. I don't think you ever get bored. But yeah, he was a AAA for a long time. He was in AAA for over a full calendar year. I believe, I forget the exact date, but I think it was August 9th or 10th, something like that, that he made his debut in AAA last year. So like 53 and a half weeks in AAA. I think it ended up being, you know, how many total starts did he have in AAA? He had 7 last year and 24 this year. So 31 total starts spanning 139 and a third innings in AAA. So he lost a little bit of his luster, but this is still a borderline, you know, frontline ace type of guy. And again, that's not a term I tend to throw around very frequently, you know, but I think even with the, you know, the down year he's had this year where, yeah, he has not been the elite Bubba that we saw going into this year. You know, the skills are still there. It's still a deep four pitch mix. The velocities, you know, sits mid 90s, can touch upper 90s. He has a good feel for his change. He has a good feel for spin. And this could be 3 above average to plus offerings. And we've seen better command and control from him in the past. So that's why I want to see him in the majors. Like, all right, does this walk rate issue that we saw for the last, you know, 3 months or so carry over into the majors? Or was this something that's going to stay behind him in AAA? Even if he's like a 9%, 10% walk rate guy, you know, given the upside he has in the strikeout rate department, you know, this could still be like a top 30 or so arm for fantasy. And, you know, just another good young arm there in Pittsburgh. I just don't know what he's going to give you this year, because it looks like that role was going to be in flux. You heard like the bulk relief, but he'll get some starts here and there. So it's kind of hard to like fully, you know what to expect with Chandler this year. But if the price tag's gone down in your dynasty league at all, you know, obviously many trade deadlines have passed at this point, but if you can look to buy low on him this offseason, if someone's like, oh, maybe he's not as good as we thought he was. Yeah, like I still don't like him as much as I like Andrew Painter, Travis Sakura. You know, I even think I put Jonah Tong over him at this point. But this is still a very good arm talent. So don't give up on Bubba Chandler. You know, still a great long-term potential here. So see what he can do this year. All right. So who else could we see with their major league teams this year? I mean, this is an article I write weekly over on Rotoballer, you know, on Mondays generally, that, you know, the top 25 prospects to stash for redraft leagues. And, you know, it's kind of been, that list has been kind of depleted so far this year, but the top three still remain, which from my article a handful of days ago was Christian Campbell, even though I know he's not a prospect, but I've been including him in, I thought it was relevant. Christian Campbell, Jordan Lawler, and Andrew Painter. Chandler obviously got the call-up. He was fourth on that list. Still waiting on Spencer Jones, J.J. Weatherholt. So there's still plenty of that top 10 from my rankings this week that are still there. You know, I still think we see Campbell at some point this year, though I'm just not sure when. I mean, he'd probably take it back over at second base right now, with Lowe being at first base. Though Campbell has been playing, you know, a good amount of first base in AAA as well. After a slow start there, he was heating back up at the AAA level. So I think we do see Campbell at some point. Jordan Lawler, I mean, you'd imagine you see Jordan Lawler at some point again this year, especially after, Arizona traded away a few guys. But, you know, he has not gotten the call yet. I don't think they want to rush him just given the, you know, vast injury history that we've seen from Jordan Lawler. But, you know, that upside is still there. That power-speed blend, still pretty fun for fantasy. He's on currently a five-game hitting streak. Since he got back to AAA, he's had a hit in all five games. One triple, two doubles, and one home run. Two walks, just three strikeouts in those five games. With the home run coming yesterday on Wednesday as I'm recording this. So I still think there's plenty of upside there. And maybe a guy that has dual eligibility, you know, he could play second, third, short. So we'll see. Obviously, he won't be playing short with Perdomo there, but could see him at second base or third base later this season. So Campbell, I think we see again at some point. Jordan Lawler, I think we see again at some point. Still going to think we see Painter. You know, this is kind of later than we thought. They're kind of saying like, oh, right after the All-Star break. Well, All-Star break was over a month ago now. Granted, Painter hasn't been phenomenal in AAA this season, but he's still a no-doubt top five pitching prospect. I saw him live last year out in the AFL when he was rehabbing out there. So he was still shaking off the rust as a guy that was coming back from major injury and major surgery. And he still was very, very impressive. You know, the velocity, you know, the command was rusty, as you would expect back then, and still kind of is. But, you know, this is a guy that has the stuff to be a true ace in this league. So I do think we see Painter get at least some sort of shot this year. Maybe it's, you know, not in a full-time starter's role. We'll see. But I do think we see him. I still think we see Spencer Jones at some point, though he's really cooled off. Kind of going back to the old Spencer Jones after seeing those contact rates go up similar to Casey. Now he's reverted back to his old ways, but obviously the upside is massive. Yankees are rolling again. They're kind of on, I think they won like seven out of the last 10, but I think there's a chance you see Spencer Jones. I think you see, though there's been conflicting reports on JJ Weatherholt, but you know, he's a top five prospect for me right now. Another guy that just does a lot of things well, without standing out in any one area. He's like the infield version of Dylan Beavers, but with more upside. Yeah, I think there's more power speed upside to be had there and potentially some multi-position eligibility with him as well. Like long-term, I think Weatherholt could be an all-star caliber player. Just not 100% sure if we see him this year. If you do, it's probably second base or third base. Gorman's been all right over at third. So Jay-Z's been at second base. Hitting for a respectable average, but like zero power right now. Like the ISO was like 0.04 or something like that. So I think you can see where the Hulk get a shot here. Benj is on the IL right now, so that kind of puts a little damper on that. But I think there's a chance you see Carson Benj later this year. Justin Crawford in Philly, Bryce Eldridge in San Francisco. All those guys could be up on the pitching side. I think maybe the next bigger one to get the call now would be Robbie Snelling. He's having a really nice bounce back season in AAA. I mean, he kind of lost a bit of his luster after his big 2023. Then you saw him kind of fall off, not really fall off a table, but a lot of that prospect shine wore off after a kind of a middle of the road lackluster year last year. But this year, he's got a 289 ERA in 20 starts, 113 whip, 6.7% walk rate, and a 29.8% K rate. He's right in that mix for number two lefty pitching prospect in the minor leagues right now, behind his teammate Thomas White, who I don't think we see this year. I'd be very shocked if we saw Thomas White this year, but I think you see Snelling get a shot with Miami sooner rather than later. I think you could see, you know, one of Sprout or Tong with the Mets, maybe Hunter Barco with Pittsburgh, but I don't think it'd be in any role where you'd be going out and adding him for fantasy, but. But the last one real quick, Trey Gibson, I think gets a shot with Baltimore, especially with them out of the playoff picture. So I think you see Trey Gibson up. He's having a kind of a stinky good season in the upper minors. And I think you see Mick Abel brought back up as well. So still a lot of notable prospects that could get the call here moving forward. And obviously just keep checking out that article I write every Monday over on Rotoballers as I ranked the top 25 and write up some of the notable names over the last week. And also, obviously, I tweet about them, you know, a lot of these guys as well. But that's going to wrap up this episode. Thanks to everyone for tuning in again. I hope you enjoyed it. I'll be back with you again on Sunday night or Monday when you listen to it for another episode of the Tool Shed. But until then, everyone take care.
Buying a car in Carvana was so easy. I was able to finance it through them.
Whoa, wait, you mean finance?
Yeah, finance. Got pre-qualified for a Carvana auto loan, entered my terms, and shopped from thousands of great car options all within my budget.
That's cool that financing through Carvana was so easy.
Financed. Done. And I get to pick up my car from their Carvana vending machine tomorrow.
Financed.
Right, that's what I said.
You can spend time trying to pronounce financing, or you can actually finance and buy your car today on
Carvana.
Financing subject to credit approval. Additional terms and conditions may apply.
Buying a car in Carvana was so easy. I was able to finance it through them.
Whoa, wait, you mean finance?
Yeah, finance. Got pre-qualified for a Carvana auto loan, entered my terms, and shopped from thousands of great car options all within my budget.
That's cool that financing through Carvana was so easy.
Financed. Done. And I get to pick up my car from their Carvana vending machine tomorrow.
Financed.
Right, that's what I said.
You can spend time trying to pronounce financing, or you can actually finance and buy your car today on
Carvana.
Financing subject to credit approval. Additional terms and conditions may apply.